This podcast is sponsored by Low No Drinker magazine, the number one UK magazine for the sober, curious drinker, bringing you news, reviews and interviews from the people, places and brands leading the low and no alcohol revolution. As a Sober Rebel listener, use code SOBERREBEL15 to get 15% off any digital or print subscription from the Low No Drinker magazine for 6 whole months. Hello and welcome to the Sober Rebel podcast, where I talk to my guests about the benefits they've noticed in sobriety, the things they're doing now that they'd never have done as a drinker, or the things that they've noticed that have changed for the better. And of course, we talk about their journey into sobriety and what's helped them and supported them. And today I'm talking to Meg. Meg is a published author of a book called Intoxicating Lies, stripping back all those lies we tell ourselves as to why we drink. And she's going to talk more about her journey into sobriety and the things she's noticed. Thank you so much for taking the time to come on the podcast. It's really lovely to meet you at last.
It really is lovely to meet you too. I know it's taken a little bit of time and I'm just so excited to spend this time with you. Finally, right?
I know. We've been planning this a long time, haven't we?
Yes. Yes.
So just to begin with, just to set the scene for all the listeners, share whatever you'd like to about your sobriety, how long you've been sober, your journey.
Sure. So I'm a mother of two. And just to tell you who I am, I'm Meg Geis-White. I'm a mother of two, and I'm the author of Intoxicating Lies, One Woman's Journey to Freedom from Gray Area Drinking. I'm also in pharmaceutical sales in rare disease. And I'd say all of that because I really never hit a rock bottom with my drinking. In fact, I was told by my own therapist at that time, who is no longer my therapist, that she thought I was overthinking about it and that I didn't have a problem.
I cannot believe that.
It took me a really long time to work up the courage to actually tell her that I thought I had a drinking problem, how I was struggling internally, silently, really not telling very many people about it because I thought something was wrong with me. I held a lot of shame and guilt around it, thinking, why can't I get this under control like everyone else? Why does my drinking look like everyone else's? And what's wrong with me? And so when I finally got the courage to say to her, I'm kind of going through this detox to retox loop daily that is just really this tug of war in my brain. And all this back and forth that I was having, this kind of internal conversation with myself. And when she said, no, I really don't think you do. I think you're thinking about it too much. Her ill advice really kept that gray area of drinking going for 2 more years. And it really wasn't until I listened to my own inner knowing, who was pleading with me, saying that something's not right. We need to look and explore our relationship with alcohol. So I had found a video online by SoberSys, and I don't know if you've ever heard of SoberSys, but it's a private online group of women. And Jen Couch, who is the founder of it, was talking about this detox to retox loop, this mental tug of war, kind of Groundhog's Day merry-go-round. And I was like, oh my God, there's somebody else who feels like me. I mean, I literally thought I was the only person in the planet that felt like this. Yeah. And this was in 2019. So there was not a lot of discussion at that time about gray area drinking. Now there is, but at that time, that was the only place that I was kind of seeing myself in the stories. I just wasn't feeling like I had hit this rock bottom. I knew I was headed that way if I stayed where I was going.
Yeah.
With my drinking, because we're all on that same pathway. And so I honestly didn't want to break up with alcohol in 2019. I just wanted to, I was truly sober, curious, wanted to take a break, literally thought I could get some tools under the tool belt and go back to being a quote unquote normal drinker, whatever that means. Right. And so yeah. I really was still under the intoxicating lies of alcohol and I didn't even know it. And so I got into this program. I thought, well, there'll be three, maybe me and three other women. I don't know, you know, like a couple people in this group. And there were thousands of women in there. And I thought, wait a second, why are there so many women in here? And I just got really, really curious. And because I'm in pharmaceutical sales, I love science. So one of the first books we read was This Naked Mind by Annie Grace. And I really dove into the science, and it was like the veil started coming down. And I'm thinking to myself, wait a second, we don't have any of these warnings on the bottle that it's linked to 8 types of cancer. We aren't told that's it, you know, like a anywhere really, until we think we have a problem and we have to seek out this information, that it's a depressant on our central nervous system, that it's a toxin, that the FDA wouldn't approve it if it were discovered today. And all these things that just kept like kind of waking me up. And so I became more curious, and I'm a big journaler. And so I was journaling my sober curious journey. And I thought, you know, I'm going to go for 60 days. And at 60 days, my sleep started to improve. And I thought, well, this is interesting. And so then, you know, I've always had eczema. At 90 days, my eczema started clearing up. And I thought, well, wait a second, there's more to this. And my relationships started improving. I had more clarity at work. And I just started having more energy. Instead of starting my day at a deficit, I was starting it at a surplus, like jumping out of bed and finding more and more time. And as a busy working mom, don't we all say, like, I wish I had more time. I'm so busy. I don't have enough time. And here it was like being presented to me on a daily basis. And I thought, wait a second, why am I started having this question, like, why would I go back? Like, what is this providing for my life?
Yeah.
And I really couldn't find any reasons to go back. And so I did the next course that she had provided, which is called the Alcohol-Free Lifestyle. And these were people who weren't just sober curious, but were really, really committed to looking to a life without alcohol. And then I did her next program, which was Quest, which is like, I forever want to be alcohol-free. And that was 4.5 years ago. So in November, I will be 5 years alcohol free. And it was one of the most beautiful journeys, in that it also was kind of this incredible awakening for me, spiritually, and just kind of this inner knowing that I had ignored, right, for so long, who was guiding me to the truth. And in my book, I talk a lot about this inner knowing. And I think as mothers, we have this motherly, you know, and men and women both have it. We all have intuition, but how much do we tune into it? And when do we slow down to listen to it? And we just aren't taught in our society to do so. We're taught to, you know, hustle and grind and achieve and keep going and use alcohol as a reward, as a escape. And in my book, the very first lie is, I deserve a drink. And with all of the communities that I talk to, that is the lie that most people believe, is that they deserved it, they've earned it. And for me, it was my self-care. At 5 o'clock, you know, when I got home from work, and after taking care of my physicians and accounts all day, and finally got the kids dinner and got everybody kind of settled and got through that witching hour, that glass of wine was, and what I thought, taking care of me, which was such an intoxicating lie.
Yeah. I love the name of the book.
Thank you. I have brilliant. To give husband credit. He came up with the name.
It's just brilliant though, isn't it? Because they are intoxicating lies. And there's something that you said there that I'd like to pick up on. And that is that you said to your therapist, now, obviously I'm a therapist, I would obviously react completely differently. However, I've shared this with you on Instagram, that I had the same experience. It wasn't so much a therapist, but a coach and a mentor. So this is before I qualified, before I decided that this would be my career. And I mentioned to this person, I want to quit drinking. And initially there was sort of an encouragement, but the minute I hit day 5, I know exactly when it was. It was 2012, so that's how long ago.
Wow.
And the minute I hit day 5, and it was a little bit difficult, as it can be, it was, oh, well, do you know what? You're not that bad. A bottle of wine a night is nothing.
Now, and we get these permission slips, right, from our physicians, from our coaches, from our therapists, from even our health instructors at workouts. Yeah. And this is what makes gray area drinking so confusing, because we are told you're fine, it's not that bad. Just sweat out the toxins, or one bottle a night's not that big a deal. Or my doctor said 2 glasses a night is not that bad. So, you know, why we listen to these outside opinions and voices is because they are, like you said, mentors or guides or people that we look up to. And when we get those permission slips, we run with them. I mean, I know I did. I was like, oh, phew, thank God, right? I'm okay. And the thing is, we have to not listen to those voices. If someone's saying that to you, it doesn't really matter where you are on the alcohol use disorder spectrum. If you and something inside of you, that small, quiet voice, that inner knowing is saying, this doesn't feel right, there's something wrong here, you know, an alarm is kind of going off, and if you're questioning it, you probably have some kind of issue with it. Where you are on that spectrum, you know, I'm not here to diagnose anyone, but what I will tell you, in being in pharmaceutical sales, I have talked to my own primary care doctor about this. And she said that there are 3 reasons that doctors in particular are handing out these permission slips. Number one, many of them are gray area drinkers. You know, physicians, again, not all of them, but a lot of them are stuck in this gray area drinking. They aren't trained on gray area drinking. That's the second thing. So the awareness is not there like it needs to be in their training. And the third thing is, when you go to see your GP, you have a set limited amount of time. And to really kind of explore where you are on that alcohol use disorder spectrum takes time, right? Because there's many different shades of gray, and it's a wide, vast category. And unless you're really at the end stage where you need a medical detox because you're physically dependent upon it, they aren't really trained on how to have that discussion, and they don't have the time in the appointment to do so. And it's for those 3 reasons that I think we're, as a society, handing out these permission slips. And it's a dangerous one, because if we stay stuck in this gray area drinking, we're on the same one-way drinking highway going towards that end stage drinking. And if we don't take an exit ramp to explore it and lift up the hood under the car and say, what's going on here? For me personally in my life, what is this providing for me? What is this giving to me? We are all headed the same direction. And that's dangerous, ultimately, because we know it's cumulative. We know that our tolerance increases, and then we need more and more. And I know every time I took a break, my drinking came back with vengeance. Like, I would drink even more than I had. And it's almost like when you deprive yourself of the chocolate, then you crave it even more, and you end up eating the whole sundae versus maybe a little bit of it, or the whole candy bar instead of a bite of it. You know, it's like you come back with like, oh my God, I need this. You know, I haven't had this. And so I think by rewiring our brains and getting into whatever avenue of support looks good to you, I mean, and now there's so many places and so many ways to get alcohol free, or at least be sober curious. And I think it's a wonderful thing, because each one may be different for each person, and you have to find the one place where you see your drinking is similar to the other people in the group.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. It's sort of that feeling of not being alone.
Yes. I mean, they say, right, the old adage is that the antidote to addiction is connection. And so I feel like there were many times where what William Porter says, you know, in his book, Alcohol Explained, where the drinking amnesia sets in. Your brain is this tricky thing where it's like, oh, you really weren't that bad. Remember, everybody told you you didn't have a problem. You can have one. This happened to me. I actually have a story about this in my book. I had not drank for 15 months, and with COVID and the presidential debate and some work issues, and then a major issue that happened with my daughter, I hit that F it moment that we all have when life just kind of comes, you know, barreling down. And that drinking amnesia kicked in. And I had a few sips, and it burned going down. My stomach literally popped up and was like, ew, are we doing this again? Like, this this does not feel good. My physical body was rejecting it as the poison that it is, right? And after that much time, it was like, oh no. But my brain was like in a different place, right? It was looking for that crutch. That intoxicating lie was still back in the back of my brain, that if the, you know what, hit the fan, it would be there as a crutch. And so I realized in that moment that I still had an intoxicating belief in my brain. I thought I had kind of worked through a lot of it, but there was still one lurking back there. And I don't, and I say this because I think a lot of us go back and forth in our drinking and try to take breaks and then come back. And sometimes it takes a few times to really have it click. And I know in that moment, my daughter came down the stairs and she saw me drinking and she had tears in her eyes. And she said, "Mommy, is this my fault?" And it was like my why got slapped across my face, and I poured the wine down the sink, and it really woke me up to that last intoxicating lie in my head that this was not going to cure COVID. I was going to wake up tomorrow hungover, still dealing with the presidential debate, work issues. And here I am telling my daughter, we were having a discussion about some vaping. It was about vaping and how that's a highly addictive, you know, product. And I'm telling her not to do it. And here I am modeling to her a highly addictive product, drinking it. And I was like, what am I doing? Yeah. And I think as parents, we have to like step back, not with shame. I didn't shame myself. I just thought, this doesn't even make any sense. Here I am telling her not to do a highly addictive product, and here I am doing one. What do I want to model to my own children, that when life gets really hard, mommy pads herself, mommy goes and has a drink, mommy needs her sanity juice, so that when she gets older, that's what she'll do? No, I didn't want that for her. And I knew society was going to show her that at every turn. Hey, wow, you really deserve a drink. You've earned it. And so that was the last time I had drank. I don't count that as going back to day one. It was part of the journey. And for me, and everybody's different, but for me, I think that those data points, those setbacks sometimes we have in our sober, curious journey, actually, if we get curious about them and say, what did I learn in this? What did I realize that I still believed about alcohol? Then it propels you forward in your journey. If you just use it as an excuse, then no, right? Then that's not the right thing, because you're just going to keep going back. But if you really truly get curious about it with loving awareness and compassion for yourself and say, why did I do this? Like, what did I think this was going to give me? And I realized it wasn't going to solve any of my problems. I was going to wake up to the hot mess I was still in the next day, but now compounded by a hangover. And the only way I could do that was with all of the work I had done, right? To all the learnings, all the books I read, my community. And so I went back to my community and I told them what happened. And they lifted me up and supported me and reminded me about why I made that right choice. And that's where connection is so important, right? Is that instead of being alone in that moment, I went to them and said, oh my God, I almost went back. Like, this is what happened. I hit this F it moment. And so it was so wonderful to be in community with other women that are like, it happens, right? It happened to me too. And this is what happened. And, you know, it's not worth going back. And all the reminders of that drinking amnesia that sets in, we need that constant community that for me, a year and a half later, I still needed it.
Yeah. Yeah. And well done for not sort of going any further than that. I mean, that's amazing in that moment that you noticed it straight away. You picked up on it. You almost saw the hypocrisy of what you were saying to your daughter and then what you were modeling as a mum. And I hadn't got to the point of having discussions like that with Mike because my daughter was a bit younger, but I could imagine having conversations about things like smoking, vaping, drugs, alcohol, and not wanting her to rely on alcohol the way that I was. I can now listen to my own intuition. And that's really important.
That is really at the core of what my book is about, is that I believe that we all have this inner knowing, this intuition that is guiding us to the truth, guiding us to what's in alignment for our lives, guiding us to what makes our soul come alive. And we aren't taught in anywhere, really, in school or college or anywhere, how to tune into this inner knowing. And I believe that when we do this, when we get still and quiet, and for me, it began through meditation. And I know a lot of people are going to roll their eyes and think, I don't have time for this. I can't do meditation. When I sit down, I get the monkey brain. My brain is all over the place with all these thoughts. And what I will say to you is that if you've been on this sober, curious journey or alcohol-free journey, you know how to sit with those uncomfortable feelings when you're at a party and everybody's drinking and you're the one person that's not, and you feel uncomfortable and you feel awkward sometimes, especially at the beginning of the journey. I mean, I know now I don't really care, but at the beginning, I felt like I was naked in a room. And so when you're in that room full of people and you're able to sit with those uncomfortable feelings, that's exactly what you're doing in meditation, is you're allowing all of the things to kind of come to the surface and go, oh, okay, let me get curious with loving compassion about why this is coming up for me. And what do I truly need? And, you know, I had to go to my husband and say, you know, with COVID, like, I am trying to homeschool the kids. I'm trying to clean in the kitchen and cook and do all the things. I need help. I need support. What we truly need is community, rest, and support, not alcohol. But society is telling us the opposite, right? And so we sometimes have to slow down and really listen to what our bodies need in that moment. It might be a good cry with a friend, or it could be that it's a trauma, a past trauma that's popped up, and we do need to get with a therapist. And I do talk a lot about that in my book too, because I'm a big proponent of therapy through this journey in the second half. When you get rid of alcohol, all the stuff that you are numbing out is going to come to the surface. And it's important that we handle it with loving compassion for ourselves, because this is the second phase of that shame and guilt and regret that we can move into, I believe, in the alcohol-free journey, where we start to beat ourselves up with that ego negative voice, and we can get stuck in these negative loops. And so I think that by learning how to sit with those uncomfortable feelings and showing up for ourselves, we always have access to it in breath and in meditation and with support, with a therapist, friend, family member, whatever it may be for you, that we learn how to start trusting ourselves. And when we can start trusting ourselves, then we don't need to be looking to the outside, like we were talking about at the beginning of this podcast, for the permission slips. It's you give yourself the permission slip. You show up for yourself, and you have access to it at any moment, whether friends are there or not. But it takes time. It takes a lot of time and a lot of work, inner work, to get to this place. And we are a society of instant gratification as well. And
oh yeah, I was so guilty of that. Instant gratification. Yeah. It was my middle name.
Yeah. It's another intoxicating lie that we think that we can kind of, and let's face it, alcohol is instant gratification. That first drink does give you that 20-minute, you know, dopamine release of like, feeling relaxed, feeling the escape, it does. Yeah. But then after 20 minutes, you're just chasing that quote unquote dopamine high, and you're not going to get it back. And we don't talk about that either, right? So you're just sucking down time and lies after that first 20 minutes. And what we don't talk about as well is that that 20 minutes is, you know, compounding our anxiety, our depression, making our mental health worse. So in 20 minutes, we could meditate, we could go for a walk, we could talk with a friend, we could, you know, get a little bit of exercise to get the dopamine going. So there's so many other ways of getting that release and asking for support.
Yeah, and I think that one of the things that it also robs from you is there's that hedonic set point, that feeling of joy. And so initially when you're first drinking alcohol, it's taking you into that happiness, that hedonic happiness state.
Yeah.
And then what happens over time and over repeated alcohol use is you are still dipping down after that initial kick up. But what's happening is that's gradually lowering and lowering and lowering. And so even those initial drinks aren't taking you above your hedonic set point. So you're not feeling it. You're not getting the same happiness from the drink.
You're starting at a deficit.
You are. And I think that's something that when somebody first goes sober, it's really important to understand that's what's going on and that alcohol has robbed your ability to feel joy in the everyday. So there's an initial flatness, a little bit of a flatness to life, which people misinterpret as boredom or whatever. And the minute they then reach for that drink, because they've told themselves they're not having it, they get that kick again of joy, excitement, but it's false. And it's actually keeping you stuck. So it's just keeping in mind, you know, you can look up the hedonic set point. There's a diagram you can find. If you type in hedonic set point and alcohol into Google, it will bring up this journal article. And you can find
that. So well said, because it's the detox to retox loop that then we get stuck in. We just, you know, we'll stop drinking for a few days and we'll start to feel better. And then we go through this, oh, I'm not so bad. And we just keep in this cycle as gray area drinkers. And it's, you know, one where we may take many breaks and think, oh, I'm not that bad. I'm okay. Look, I can go a long time without alcohol. But then we slowly but surely slip back into that state that you're talking about. And we don't realize that it is really compounding and making everything harder, and parenting, work, everything. And what you said, I think, is most important is the joy that we lose in life. So we're not only numbing kind of that, the hard emotions, but we're also numbing the good.
Yeah, exactly. And then after a period of time, and it's not that long, you get that feeling of joy back and you just notice, I don't know, you go for a walk or you look at a view or you're pegging the washing out or something and you just think, oh, I'm feeling really content. And that's what people, I think, refer to as the pink cloud. Now, I would say I've got a pink sky because there is no way that was going anywhere. Once I started to feel that joy, I wanted to tap back into that every day. And so that's where gratitude practices are really good, to kind of really tap back in every day to go, okay, what am I grateful for? Even in the tough times, because, you know, life doesn't suddenly become perfect.
Right.
But in those tough times, you can still go, do you know what? If all else fails, I'm grateful for my sobriety because it's brought so many amazing things into my life.
I love that. I love the pink sky because I feel that every day too. And I have a little thing in the book that I talk about called Find the Beauty in the Day. So every day when I go on my walk, I will look for one. It can be a sunset, a flower. I collect heart rocks, so I find them all the time. It can even be a leaf shaped in the shape of a heart. And I look for this beauty in the day, and it shifts something in your brain. It makes you have an attitude for gratitude, like you said. And when you have an attitude for gratitude, it doesn't matter what happens in that day. Your brain is like, wait a second, look at all this beauty around me. And when I was drinking, I was always like in a slight fog. And I just was always kind of working off this slight hangover. So I was always trying to get back to that baseline that you were talking about. And it was just always this working off this hangover. I didn't have time to find the beauty in the day. I didn't look for it. I was just in autopilot, subconsciously kind of going through the motions of just trying to get through, taking care of the kids, working, you know, all the things. And when we remove alcohol, the sunsets do become brighter. You know, the flowers just jump out at you and they're incredibly bright and beautiful. And that gray fog that was surrounding me on a daily basis disappeared. And I just never want to go back to living like that. I mean, it was just such a gray, you know, not good mentally, health-wise. There were so many reasons that I could say, but it was always starting at a deficit and having to work back versus now it's like a surplus and a desire to go out and find the beauty in the day.
So I asked my guests on to talk about three areas. Now, I know we've already started to touch on your first area that you feel differently about in sobriety compared to as a drinker. But just tell us your first one.
I would really say it's this spiritual awakening, this connection to my inner knowing that grew. Once I was able to get alcohol as kind of a non-issue in my life, I really, really started tuning in more and more. I already knew it was there and I was tuning into it, but now it was this curiosity of listening to myself. And when you talk about joy, I think that especially for women, we are so disconnected from our bodies. We're told we're too thin, too fat, too aggressive, too shy, too whatever, right? And we are nurturers and we have been raised many times to be people pleasers. And so it's always this external validation, this external proving my worth and feeling like I was enough and achieving and all these things. And it wasn't until I connected, like I said, with this inner knowing of hearing myself saying, you are enough just the way you are, and you have these beautiful God-given talents, and really what makes your soul come alive. And I did this exercise where I went back to when I was a child. What did I love to do as a child? And I loved riding my bike, I loved painting. And so I started creating time in my schedule, even though I really felt like I didn't have it. Like, I took an art class, a watercolors class that was 2 hours on Monday night. And I signed up for this class because my inner knowing, the little girl within, was like, let's do this. This would be so fun. And I got to the art class and I literally was like, what was I thinking? I have so much to do. I don't have time to do this. And I kind of got like angry at myself. Like, you really think you have 2 hours on a Monday night to just go and paint? You're crazy. But I did. My husband was fine with the kids, right? He was able to take them. I got the support that I needed, got babysitters when I needed to. What happened to me in that class is that little girl within just beamed up. The 2 hours flew by in the paint strokes. I mean, it literally gives me chills right now as I speak about it, because I lost my to-do list. I lost all the worries of the day, and the joy that I had not felt in years came back. And I just was like, oh my gosh, this is pure magic. This is what life is about, right? And I would sit for 2 hours and drink many nights a bottle of wine. I did have the time. This was true self-care. And I would come home from that painting class and be a better wife, a better mother, and feel so happy inside. So whether it's dance, art, writing, right? So then I started getting back into riding my bike. I made a playlist of all empowering songs by female artists, of uplifting lyrics. And you want to talk about an adrenaline, dopamine, like if you'll see me out on the bike path, I am singing at the top of my lungs, like the little girl who used to ride her bike with the pigtails flying in the wind. It's that same sense of joy and like awe and wonder that this world wants us to have, but we have to kind of take the time to slow down and listen to it and really get curious about what does make your soul come alive? What does bring you joy? We don't talk about this either a lot as
No, we
women.
don't, do we? I mean, we don't. I think we're all so busy. You know, I was tempted then to say, as women, we're so busy, but we're all so busy. And we're all on this treadmill constantly of achieve, strive, do. And actually, I love that idea of going back to like that girl within. I was just thinking as you were talking then, what would my inner creative girl one, and it would probably be playing music. It would probably be playing the saxophone or the clarinet. And I was listening to you justifying your 2 hours. That's exactly the reason why I haven't gone and joined a band or a group or an orchestra and just did it for the sake of doing it.
Right. Just we need to play more. We need to have
Yeah.
playtime, just like as children. And that That play and that curiosity will just make your soul come alive, and that energy that you will get from playing the saxophone and music just in and of itself, right, is such a great
Mood enhancer.
uplifting, it's such an uplifting dopamine connection too. It will carry you through your week when it's really challenging, because your body's going to remember, oh, I remember those 2 hours that we had where we got to just play. It's coming again in a few days, right? And so when our bodies, I think, can find the safety in meditation with ourselves or with a therapist, and when our bodies can remember joy is part of this journey. So this inner work that we start doing is hard. It takes some brave, courage to go through and dig up some of the things in the past. But we can start seeing that we all are doing these autopilot kind of coping skills and patterns and behaviors, because as a child, that's what we were taught, or we had to survive. And these parts of us are not bad parts. So they're not to be condemned or judged or looked at like with resistance, but with loving compassion to say, oh, no wonder, you're popping up again and saying, don't do the saxophone. Go and do more. Society's telling you that. Family might have told you that. Something may have happened to you where you had to prove yourself. And so these things, I think, that become kind of rhythms for us and our bodies are so used to that humming of do, that it feels, like I said, when you sit down initially, like your body's gonna be like, wait a second, what are we doing here? Like,
You
we
haven't got
need to
time for
be.
this, you know.
No time
You
for
can't,
this.
and that is it, isn't it? Every time you do it, it does get easier. And also, you can't get it wrong. And I was listening to a podcast at the gym, multitasking this morning, just before we were recording this. And there was a conversation on there about meditation and how you can't get it wrong. It is just, and it's not about emptying your mind, it's about listening
Yes.
to what you're saying. You know,
Yes.
allow the mind to wander, allow it to come back. Focus
Yes.
on your breath or a guided meditation. Just give yourself that moment of pause, because that inner child or that inner voice is desperate
Yes.
to be heard.
It just wants to be seen, held, loved, and validated. And what you will find is these hard emotions that come up when you sit with them and you really allow yourself to cry or write it all out in the journal and dump it out. It will pass. It will pass. And, just like the alcohol-free journey was not easy at the beginning, right? The beginning was the first 30 days of going alcohol-free were the hardest, right?
Yeah, they are.
Yeah, but this it got easier over time. And the same is true with meditation. So just focus on a candle, maybe that flickering light, your breath, like you said. And it's okay if you have the monkey mind. It's very much normal, and it's what's going to happen. But like you said, if you can just say, oh, that's interesting thought, and try not to judge it, and then let it kind of on a cloud go by, another one's going to come. Okay, I see you too. I like to journal sometimes. If I wake up and I have a really bad monkey mind, I will dump in my journal first, get all the thoughts out. Like, I got to just get this out before I can sit still. Sometimes it's the opposite. I'll feel really good, and I'll sit in meditation and something will come up that I'm like, oh, whoa. And I'll have to journal about that after. So writing is so cathartic. And what I love about journals and meditation is that you can cuss, draw, write bullet points. There's no right or wrong way to journal. And just like you said, there's no right or wrong way to meditate. So there isn't this, like, I think people think, oh, I have to be like a Buddhist Zen monk. No,
This podcast I listened to was a monk, and he was actually saying, after 30 years, he's been meditating now for 30 years, and does he empty his mind? No. So
Right.
this fallacy of emptying your brain and not thinking anything, and it's just such a misconception.
Yeah.
It's actually about listening to those inner thoughts. And I love that you tag onto it the journaling, because journaling is something that I recommend people do. And it is to get those thoughts out. you weaken any negative thoughts by putting them on paper. You can argue with them more effectively. You can do, like you say, dumping of emotions onto the page. That helps to weaken them, helps you process them. But you also have a writing community as well, don't you?
So it's called Write Back to You, WRITE, Write Back to You. And I really found that after I became alcohol free, I craved this space with other women. So a community where I could slow down, really ground back into my body, reconnect with that inner knowing. And I couldn't find a place where I could do so. So much like the book, I couldn't find any books in 2019 on gray area drinking. So I wrote one. And then I created this Write Back to You community. And we start off each call with a grounding meditation. So it is that guided meditation like you spoke about. And I encourage the women to come in their pajamas with a cup of tea, hair in a bun, you know, a journal in hand. This is a place where we're just going to slow down and reconnect with that inner knowing. So we start off with a grounding meditation. And then we have a topic of the month. So there are 12 topics. It's a yearly program. And what we do in that month is, for example, the first month is on intuition and listening to your inner knowing. So the first call is all about, well, how do we do that? How do we hear our intuition? What does that look like? We talk a lot about meditation and just everything that you and I just discussed. And then the second call is what blocks our intuition? And how do we overcome those challenges? And then I have journal prompts. And so it's this way of reconnecting with yourself, with that inner knowing through the journal prompts, and then coming together in community to discuss it and really share our writings. I tell everybody, like, you don't have to be a writer. This isn't like a critiquing. This isn't a writing course. And my sister is on a lot of the calls. She's a licensed therapist, because some of the topics that we go through bring up some of these past situations that have happened in our lives. And it's important to have support as we go through what I call earth school. So we talk about grief. One month is about grief. And that was a really hard topic. My sister actually conducted that call. And what was interesting for the women is we all kind of thought we would come in and talk about a person that we lost, right? Physically lost. But what ended up happening on the call was all of the women started grieving the very thing you and I are talking about, the childhood that they lost, or the play that they lost, or the joy that they lost, or the marriage that they lost, or the friendship they lost. And so it really wasn't about someone who died. It was about all the other grief that so often we don't talk about. And that's what I want in this community, is like where we come together and we say, oh, me too, me too. And how can we work through this in a way through writing that allows us to listen to that inner knowing, who again is guiding us back to the truth of who we are.
A lot of people, when they go sober, they then do look for that. What now? What now? And for some people, they explore things like meditation, cold water dipping, exercise, running. They might take up a hobby or a craft. Like you say, you've got to explore and really listen to what that child in you used to enjoy. Is it getting on a bike and sticking some pigtails in?
Right, right. And
I think you've got to wear your pigtails personally, because you're doing it now.
Yeah, it's really allowing your inner knowing to come alive through awe and wonder and joy of this life. Like the joy. So 1 month's topic in the Write Back to You community, which you can find on my website, which is intoxicatinglies.com. So it's the name of the book. It is where the joy is equally as important as these hard topics. So we have like a month about letting go and surrendering and trust. That these letting go of these limiting beliefs is really hard work. And it is equally as important to not only, like, I don't want the women to stay in this kind of like really hard space and looking and critiquing themselves. And you can get addicted to self-help. Like that can become another addiction. we have to talk about joy and awe and wonder and play and happiness almost as much, because it is what's going to carry you through some of those dark moments where you're going inward and saying, my gosh, why does this coping skill or this pattern keep coming up in my life? And that's because it's asking to be looked at. It's asking to be heard and validated. And I have noticed that once I started, instead of resisting all this stuff and instead leaning into it, it started flowing through me and life started happening for me, not at me, because I see each one of these challenges as a teacher, as a gift. Yeah. As something to get curious about. There's something inside of me that has not been healed. And I, when it pops up, I go, oh, there's something else, you know, and what is this? And why is this? And, oh, it's the little girl who, you know, lost all her friends in fifth grade and feels in this work moment where she's not being included, just like she did in fifth grade. Oh, yeah. Oh, you know, and then I start hugging and loving on her. And so this work issue that has really probably nothing to do with me, but has triggered that little fifth grade girl, right, who was ostracized in fifth grade. Now I can sit with her and be with her and love on her. And then it passes.
Yeah. That's beautiful.
Yeah. I love Elizabeth Gilbert, you know, Eat, Pray, Love author. She talks about this earth school, and she has on her Substack a really profound journal prompt that has been transformative. If you wanted just one journal prompt, when you sit in meditation, it should be this one. It is, Dear Love or Dear Inner Knowing, what would you have me know today? And just listen, what would you have me know today? And you will be blown away with what pops up. Yeah.
I love it. I knew it was going to be great fun talking to you.
Well, thanks. I've loved talking to you about all this.
Well, so that's your first thing. We've got to do yet. What's your second thing?
So that the second thing is really kind of ties into the first thing, which is when we spend this time in this space with ourselves, we learn how to trust ourselves. And when we learn to trust ourselves with that loving awareness and compassion that I talk about, we are able to stop the people-pleasing, stop the external validation, stop the need to keep grinding and hustling. And I am constantly working on this. I don't have this figured out. Brené Brown doesn't have this figured out. Oprah doesn't have this figured out. We all have therapists. I don't want it to seem like, oh, I've got it all figured out. This is constant work, right? It's the inner work that's never done. But when we step into the same river, we step into it with a different lens, a different perspective, and like I said, more flow and less resistance. And so my whole thing is like, how do we have life? How can we reframe it where life is happening for us versus at us and to us? So trusting myself has been the greatest probably change for me. Most recently, I've just taken a break from social media. And so this is my work. As a little girl, I was told a lot that I disappointed my parents. And I really felt into this perfectionism, have to prove, have to do well, overfunctioning. I had some traumas that happened, some sexual assaults and a date rape that happened that I didn't want to look at or deal with. So I went into an overfunctioning state of being, quite frankly, to stay busy. And by staying busy, I didn't have to look at all of the other things. It was another form of alcohol. It was another distraction. And so this whole like leaning in and trusting myself and not going for external validation, I started feeling on social media like I call it in the book, the machine. It's like a vortex, the culture. It sucks you into the comparison lie. That's an intoxicating lie where we start comparing ourselves to other people. And because this is at the heart of my work, of what I need to do for that little girl, I get swept up and sucked in very easily because for me, it is the autopilot coping skill that has helped me thrive and achieve many awards at work and things like that, right? And so I have just recently just been settling into a place of not doing anything and being okay with just being. And at first it was the same thing as alcohol. It felt really kind of like awkward, uncomfortable, but immediately this peace and calm and like just being okay with being me and not needing to post every day and get the likes and the followers and all the things that I knew I had to do as a published author, but I started shifting into I should. And anytime you use the word should, we know we need to shed it, right? We need to shed.
Absolutely. Change it for could.
Yes. And so if you're inspired to post and you want to post and, or you're, you come from a place of, you know, it feeling an alignment for you, then yes, do it, right? But if it started to shift for me where I was feeling like, well, you should do this and you should do this. And because I get very swept up into this machine of produce, produce, produce. So it's a place, again, where I have a choice. Do I want to listen to the outside world that's going to praise that production, praise that achieving, or do I want to go inward and just be? And I have been reading and writing, and I'm feeling a second book brewing from all of this time that this little girl is saying, wait, no, 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 stop all that. It's not in alignment right now. Let's do this instead. This is an alignment. And it's that inner knowing that I'm just like, okay, I'm going to follow you. And what's crazy is I don't miss social media, kind of like drinking. Like I don't miss it anymore. And that is very telling, because when I think you say no to something in your life and more expansion and space opens up and you feel your creativity rising, that's when you know you're in alignment, you know, because it's like, oh, something's here that wanted to be seen. And I probably will go back at some point, and I don't know when, and I may come back in a totally different capacity. And that's fine too, but I want to show up in the way that feels authentic. I can't be telling women to go do this and I'm myself not doing it, right?
Yeah. Oh, that was the reason I quit drinking as well, being a therapist. And then it was the day that somebody came in and said, I really want to stop drinking. And I thought, yeah, so do I.
Wow. And I think, you know, we get these little messengers, these little angels that come in. They're always like on our side.
There are signs, aren't there? There are those little glimpses of, oh, and some of those signs are sometimes a little bit painful. And some of those signs are really encouraging. And yeah, you just got to be open to looking for them.
Oh, you do. And I could never see those signs when I was drinking. But now, like, we talk about the joy. I see angel numbers all the time. I believe in angels and that we have angels by us, and they always want to help. And so I yesterday saw a ton of 888s, which is abundance. And then I saw a bunch of bunnies when I was outside yesterday. I mean, just, I don't know, almost 10 of them, like an insane amount of bunnies. And so I know that they're a sign of abundance as well. And I feel like, yeah, the universe is always speaking to us and it's trying to say, you know, abundance is on its way. And then I'll see 444, which is protection, and we're protecting it and trust in us, trust this. Like, you know, sometimes when I'm feeling maybe, like, I'll give you an example about a friendship that I needed to let go that was very toxic. I was riding my bike on the bike trail, letting those pigtails fly, listening to the music, and a huge snake came in front of my bike. And I talk about it in the book as well. Snakes are a symbol to shed the past. And what I love about snakes shedding their old skin is you can see the outline of the old woman of who you were, and not with judgment or regret, but you grow into this brighter, more clear, more vibrant skin. And so I knew the universe was saying, you need to let this friendship go. You need to shed it.
Yeah.
And so when we wake up to this kind of beauty that's around us, oh, it is like magic every day outside. I'm like, I wonder what I'm going to see today. I can't wait.
It's brilliant.
I love it.
So what's your third thing?
Just less hustle and grind and being okay with the peace. We talked about this at the beginning of the podcast. I think where I thought alcohol was really like making me fun and that I could only have fun with it. And it was actually softening. I'm very empathic. I can walk into a room and feel everyone's energy. So when I would go into a bar and all of the loud music and energy and yelling, everyone's talking really loud, it was a lot for my system. And so the alcohol would kind of like soften those rough edges and allow me to stay there for hours. And now when I go in there, yes, I like to go have fun with my friends, but I don't really want to stay for the hours that I used to stay because that isn't fun to me anymore. I would rather have a cup of coffee or go on a walk with a friend and have a deep, meaningful conversation than a surface one at a bar. And so this peace, this truly just being okay with less chaos, less drama, less hustle, and really easing into it has been one of the greatest changes for me, where I'm really quite happy to just read a book and, go for a walk and watch a great movie with my husband and call it a night and be in bed and have a great, to me, that's kind of my new fun. And it may sound boring to some people, but it is a piece that I think I've always craved, but never could find in the bottle. I was really caught up in like a lot of drama when I was drinking. I would get sucked up into that as well. And it just was all of it was exhausting. It was just exhausting. And now I feel refreshed. Even when I don't have a good night's sleep for whatever reason, on occasion, I still wake up feeling 10 times better than I ever did when I was drinking. And it's just starting the day and life at a surplus. And I think it's all waiting for us. We just have to explore it.
So, what would you say to somebody at the start of their journey? I ask this question quite a lot because I always think we have such wisdom in hindsight.
It's really important to be curious and compassionate with yourself. So I would be curious on what intoxicating lie you believe about alcohol. And if I had to just simplify it for somebody, I would say, where do you believe that it is a reward or a crutch? Really have no shame and guilt around how you've used it, why you've used it. Really have compassion for yourself that you've been taught to do this. We've been trained really since early childhood in TV, movies, family, culture, everywhere we turn. And so it's no fault of your own, but I do feel like it is your responsibility to get curious about it and to take the steps to getting into a community, if you can, getting the support that you need, and really start wondering where you can fulfill that belief with rest or support or community, something else other than alcohol, and see if you can shift out of the belief that you need it because it's just an intoxicating lie.
Yeah, absolutely. It's that getting curious and the self-compassion as well, that kindness towards yourself. And one of the areas that Dr. Christian Neff talks about with self-compassion is the idea that we are all sort of interconnected, and that sometimes when we're in these moments, we can feel so alone. So, like, it's only us that can't handle our alcohol. It's only us that's tried this 10 times now, and I can't seem to get it to stick. It's only, and actually, it's realizing there's so many people that comes from the community, but it just comes from just reassure yourself that you're not the only one. I don't know about you, but I didn't get sobriety the first time I tried. The first
Oh,
time
no.
I tried, I sort of got talked out of it. You talk about talking to your therapist and them saying, oh, here's your permission slip, or somebody might go to their GP. And so it's not ever going to be the same as somebody else's journey to
Right.
have some self-compassion if you're struggling or if this isn't your first attempt. It doesn't mean it can't be your last one and that it's
Yes.
actually going to be successful.
Keep trying. Don't give up. Don't compare your journey to anyone else's. Everyone is unique. And yeah, get into community, get the support that you need because over time, drinking amnesia is a real thing. Just lots and lots of self-compassion. Yes, because we are not alone in this. I can guarantee you there are several people who have similar stories to yours and are there to support you and have walked the path. And when we can connect with other people, it is amazing the transformations that can happen. It's just the gift that keeps on giving. Even at 4.5 years, I wake up and I think, thank God, I feel great today.
Yeah. Well, that's a perfect way to end our chat, isn't it? Isn't that just a soundbite to end on?
Yes.
So thank you so much, Meg. It's been lovely to get to know you and to have this conversation. Thank you for sharing.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. It was a true honor to have this conversation with you. I loved it.
If you'd like to find out more about Meg, I will put a link to her Instagram profile where you'll be able to find her book. And of course, you can go to her website. Equally, if you'd like to find out more about myself or working with me, then head to louisaevans.com, where you'll find a range of self-hypnosis recordings, links to my audiobook, and more information about therapy sessions. And don't forget, if you want to try self-hypnosis, you can use the code SOBERREBEL to buy one, get one free. As always, thank you so much for taking the time to listen today.